All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, January 11th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. It is a crispy 19 degrees and it looks like partly sunny here in upstate New York, but it is chilly. We went from 50 degrees on Sunday morning to 19 degrees by Sunday night. So it's quite a change. I am back in hibernation mode, but it's okay. It's already January. That means that we are getting closer to the first days of spring. So where do we, well, you know what, before where do we leave off on Friday, one of the things I want to mention, just because this was one of my favorites, was that I don't know if anybody saw, but apparently I woke up this morning and David Bowie died last night. Actually, I haven't processed it yet, but makes me very sad. David Bowie was somebody who, back in the early 70s, I remember seeing him as a child on Saturday Night Live as the musical talent. And there were two songs that he did. One was TVC 1-5 and one was I'm Just a Boy. But I will never forget TVC 1-5, seeing some dude in a dress, these other two guys with white pasty makeup. One was dressed in a red dress outfit and one was in a black dress outfit. I think that was Klaus Naomi was one of the side singers, and he had this little robot dog with a TV screen embedded in its chest driving around on the screen. It was probably one of the most bizarre things I ever saw as a kid. But I remember thinking to myself, wow, there's a lot more to life that I just don't quite understand. Bowie's music has always been something that I've enjoyed, and I just want to wish him well. I don't know, it's pretty sad because you know, we're seeing a lot of icons. I mean, Spock, Leonard Nimoy just passed away in 2015. I saw, too, Angus Scrimm, who was, I don't remember what they called him, but he was like the scary dude, the caretaker in Phantasm, if you remember that movie as a kid. And it just makes me sad because it really means like we're getting older and time is still passing. And it's finite. You know, we're not here forever. So just a shout out to David Bowie. And I know probably a lot of people don't like him because he was so strange, but he was kind of my whole way of looking at the world and just saying, hey, you know what? You don't have to be normal necessarily to make a difference. So anyway, okay, where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Mental Health, Google Smart Apps and Dopamine. And I have to say thank you very much to all of you that listened to the show. Somehow my show ended up with 110 views. Not sure how that happened, but thank you very much. We had looked at a lot of different things. We kind of started out looking at, I think, mosquitoes. We had been on the mosquito and the Zika whatever virus, and then continued on into some of the connections between mental health and our microbiome, and then the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, now going to work for Google. And that is Tom Insel. And Tom Insel's big deal was about making smartphone apps that can diagnose mental disease. Now, when you couple some of these things in with this whole new push for gun control, and it's everything that we had said back last year or 2 years ago when Sandy Hook had happened and Obama came out and we mentioned this and talked about his 20 executive actions. And one of the things, I remember I watched that live, and one of the things that I called out was him making comments about being able to circumvent HIPAA laws. And HIPAA laws are your privacy. We mentioned this on Friday. Between you and your doctor, having conversations. And I've had many hot discussions with some friends over that whole issue. Of course, they thought that it was fair to circumvent HIPAA laws if somebody was potentially planning an attack. Slippery slope, guys. You know, I mean, obviously we don't want some lunatic who is talking about killing people being able to act out on those thoughts, let's say. But on the other hand, you know, they haven't done anything yet. And I know there's all the things about conspiracy. You don't have to do anything to get arrested, which really freaks me out. There's been quite a number of those now, you know, with the quote unquote fight against terror. People just talking about, you know, doing something, and then the next thing they know, they're arrested, but they haven't done anything yet. And it scares me because way back when we discussed the mind, and the mind being like the last bastion of freedom where you can work through ethics and morals, you can work through the rights and wrongs without anyone being affected in the outside world. You can think through issues and decide what side you're going to be on. Think through issues and decide, wow, that's probably not such a good idea. And I know I was angry at the time and said things, or angry at the time and thought things, but you never act upon them. And so when they start arresting people for conspiring to commit a crime, I have personal issues with people being arrested for a crime that maybe they thought about, but they never committed. So here we have the circumventing of these HIPAA laws, things that maybe you talk to your psychiatrist about. And, you know, I don't know. I've had some mentally ill friends who've confided some pretty twisted stuff at some point in time to me. And, you know, I don't know even what to say about this. You know, I mean, there's a very fine line that is crossed. I mean, obviously, if somebody starts buying like biological weapons and stuff and they're making, I mean, I don't know, would you turn them in or not? I'm going to say, I don't know. I have issues with that. I don't think I could turn somebody in. I might try and talk to them and talk them out of like some really bad life choices that they're about to make. But I don't think that I would call any type of law enforcement and blow them in. There's just no way. I ethically have an issue with that. I might get some friends to stop them from doing what they're planning on doing, but I don't think I'd blow them in. But there's another little glitch there, because if you know about a crime and you don't report it, you also can be held responsible. And I just saw, I don't know if you guys caught, El Chapo was caught this weekend again. And it comes out that Sean Penn had interviewed El Chapo in Mexico in regards to doing a movie or something. And now I just saw this morning, because I thought about this when I first read that, I was like, wow, the guy was a fleeing felon who nobody knows where he is. And they had not only federal law in Mexico chasing him, but also federal law from the United States were helping out. And here Sean Penn apparently knew where he was, had this interview with him, and didn't tell anybody. So now I saw this morning, and I'd questioned him, like, wow, won't he get in trouble for that? Apparently there are now questions as to whether or not he broke the law by not blowing in El Chapo. But anyway, back to this mental health care and gun debate. So I saw a story over the weekend. Obama gun control push does lead the Health and Human Services to change the HIPAA rule on background checks. So they did change it. I mean, HIPAA was a law. It's something that in technology, when we were building networks for hospitals, especially there, once they came out with HIPAA, we had to be very, very compliant. And there are lots of rules for privacy and encryption and, you know, end-to-end, make sure that information doesn't get out that is not supposed to get out or transferred to entities that didn't have some sort of sign-off on that protected healthcare information. And I know from personal experience, when I had my daughter, I was very sick for 9 days in the hospital, they made me sign a document so they could share my information with my husband. Did you know that they are not allowed to even share your health information with your spouse unless you've inked that paper? So the fact that all of a sudden now, you know, Obama called it 2 years ago after Sandy Hook, and now they're going to circumvent these rules, it's very disturbing. You know, the communications between you and your doctor were always considered to be private, unless, of course, there was some sort of warrant. All right, let's read this. Rule change will enable providers to show the identities of patients subject to federal mental health prohibitor for gun possession. In a story that we read on Friday, I believe, said that your mental health professional can actually turn you into the FBI. Now, interesting fact, I found out that a very good friend of mine now is, she's been in mental health services for a very long time, but now she's a manager in a facility. And so we need to have some conversations because I would like to understand if there's been any type of new rules or laws that she's been instructed that she has to follow. And I will let you guys know. I don't know. We're both really busy, but if I can catch up with her, I want to do a whole discussion and maybe even convince her to do an interview with us. All right. Anyway, the Department of Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights says it will change the rules so that mental health providers can share data with the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, part of a slate of executive actions by Obama on Tuesday of last week, announced to help curtail gun violence. The NICS is maintained by the FBI to conduct background checks on people who may be legally disqualified from owning guns. Specifically, the HIPAA privacy rule change will enable mental health providers to show the identities of patients subject to federal mental health prohibitor that prevents them from shipping, transporting, or possessing a firearm. According to the new rule, however, the new rule prohibits mental health providers from sharing any diagnostic or clinical information from the medical health records or other sources beyond the fact that a person is barred from gun ownership. So that's interesting. At least they can't tell them what you have. But on the other hand, I don't know. I need to look into laws. Are there laws really? I mean, I guess if you've been diagnosed with like complete paranoid schizophrenia and you're delusional and having visions, they probably wouldn't allow you to have a gun. But is that actually a law? I'm not sure about that, honestly. I don't know. We'll have to see. Anyway, an NICS index record consists of, quote, the name of the ineligible individual, the date of birth, sex, and codes indicating the applicable prohibitor, the submitting entity, and the agency record supporting the prohibition, according to the new rules. The change comes amid growing concerns over access to firearm in the wake, of course, of mass shootings, as I've seen in Newtown, Connecticut, and most recently in San Bernardino. And I'm going to tell you, I've been working on the Pigmind playlist again over the last week or so, and one of the ones that I started consolidating and growing was the mass shooting, which is still hidden, but it'll be there because there have been so many. And one thing I noticed is going back to like Sandy Hook and looking at some of these other shootings that we've had within the last year, especially, and then comparing it to San Bernardino, pretty amazing. Just before this whole gun push came, San Bernardino got amazing amounts of coverage compared to all the others. Like, and we are talking hundreds and hundreds of video clips just for that one incident compared to any others. And I mean, you know, you don't want to see people die or not die, who knows, you know, you don't want to see any violence happen. But on the other hand, you know, that whole event was very questionable. There were lots of weird holes in there about how the story morphed and changed. And one thing is great, by hundreds of videos, you can actually go to the very beginning and see how the story morphed up to where it ended up. But all I'm saying is there was a big push to kind of jam it into people's minds about how we need gun control, to then slip a slick willy and start pushing this through. Now, we still don't know whether or not any of Obama's executive actions are constitutional, any of the reporting is constitutional, and I guess that remains to be seen as to whether or not they're just going to allow this happen without Congress getting involved. But I'm just saying that I totally see an agenda here. On Tuesday, Obama announced an array of executive actions to address gun violence in the United States, which includes the overhaul of the background check system and enforcing checks and licenses for sales at gun shows and over the internet, increasing your mental health treatments, and that would be for dollars into mental health facilities, including a $500 million investment to increase access to mental health care, and directing the Department of Defense, Department of Justice, and Homeland Security to conduct or sponsor research into gun safety technology. Ding, dee, ding. One of the things, of course, that came out right on the tail end of this was a video. I don't know if it was Friday or Monday, said firearm safety, and it was all about smart guns. So pay attention, people. They're putting money into mental health care treatment. Of course, we have now good old Tommy Insel is over working for Google on his mental health application diagnosis of mental illness. We have DARPA, Department of Defense, and all the universities working on the brain project and understanding all these manipulations they can do with the brain, not only with drugs, but with tones and sounds and frequencies and flashes of light. And now we have a circumvention of some of the HIPAA privacy that we had had previous to this, which will at least put a leg up in some sort of public database that you've been diagnosed with something. That's nobody's fucking business. That is nobody's business. It has your name and it has your diagnosis. That is nobody's business. Again, like I said, slippery slope. We don't want somebody who is seriously mentally ill running around with a firearm. But on the other hand, it is the concept that they are giving out private information to a public database. Anyway, I really didn't want to get on the gun debate. I just wanted to point out that we are losing some definite liberties here, and there are some other crazy divisions now getting into the game, including Department of Defense, Justice, and Homeland Security, working on some new smart technologies and mental health technologies. All right, so let's get into the smart app diagnosis. So there's been all kinds of stuff. We've looked at these wearable computing devices. You know how they're really trying to push that and push the 24/7 surveillance of your heart rate or what you're eating or where you're going and how great this is and how you're going to be healthy and blah, blah, blah. And we can put the nanobots in your blood eventually, according to Google's life sciences, and cure all that ails you. There was a story. I had to deal with this one first. Fitbit. I've mentioned Fitbit many times, and this kind of was the entry level wearable Internet of Things device. Well, there's now a lawsuit against Fitbit. It says lawsuit accuses Fitbit of putting users in danger with quote unquote wildly inaccurate heart rate readings. Uh-oh. Fitbit, which I smiled at this one. Fitbit, the San Francisco-based fitness technology firm, is being sued by a group of users who say the company's wearable devices provide wildly inaccurate heart rate readings. Fitbit devices track the wearer's heart rate as well as calories burned, steps, and sleep. So they know where you are and what you're doing all the time. And some users say Fitbit devices, quote, do not and cannot consistently and accurately record the wearer's heart rate during the intense physical activity for which Fitbit expressly markets them. Fitbit says that it does not believe that the case has merit, and it stands by its technology, but the company did add that its products were not intended to be scientific or medical devices. What? So they sell them as such to provide heart rate and things, but now, whoops, let Slippery get out of this lawsuit. They weren't medical devices ever. No. We're not giving you biometric information about what's going on inside your body. No. I don't know. This kind of made me happy because this might be a way to get around some of this stuff if they ever become mandatory. I mean, I could see this rolling out from your doctor's office. Oh, Johnny, you got high blood pressure and your sugar level is high. We're going to prescribe you one of these devices that'll be able to track and monitor your blood sugar and your heart rate and send it back to me 24/7 via your cellular connection on your arm. That's not too far away. All right, anyway, I'm not going to read about the lawsuit, though. I just wanted to give a little laugh because I really hate wearable devices. They're not going to happen, not at least me. All right, smartphone app may revolutionize mental health care treatment. And before Tommy Insel was peddling this, hey, the American Friends, and I had to laugh at this, American Friends of Tel Aviv University, yes, have come out with a new technology that is poised to transform the way in which patients with mental illness are monitored and treated by clinicians. Now, if you remember, back a few months ago, I had found a PDF that had talked about the collaboration that the United States and Israel had over all their brain projects and neuroscience. So apparently, this has spun out of that. It says, this new smartphone-based system detects changes in patients' behavioral patterns. And remember, we talked about that too. Behavioral monitoring is something that is coming very fast in our faces, where just like the Fitbit, where they can track your heart rate, they can track your location, they can track when you're sleeping. And if you deviate from any of those patterns that they start to build in a database, they will find anomalies. And you know, it's much bigger than health. I mean, this is part of this entire global tracking net that they are dropping down upon us. Of course, they're going to spin it all to be for our your well-being, for our health. Of course, we have to be healthy now for 21st century America and socialized medicine coming down the pike, because it's going to help everyone and keep costs down. It's also going to allow us to play the whole green game with this COP21 meeting, where everything now causes global warming. So if you stay healthy, you cut down on your methane producing meats and things, well, that'll be good for the environment, and we'll be able to track all that as well. All right, anyway, back to mental illness though. So it'll be able, says their new smartphone-based system detects changes in patients' behavioral patterns and then transmits them to professionals in real time. Ding, da, da, ding. And it has the potential to greatly improve the response time and efficacy of clinical psychiatrists. So, yes, improve the response time when they start seeing that you're acting erratically. They are going to automatically dispatch either the Google Medevac drones with your injection or the white coats. Anyway, okay. Mental illness accounts for 90% of all reported suicides and places the largest burden of any disease on social and economic infrastructures worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. There is a dire need for support services to assist clinicians in the evaluation and the treatment of those suffering from mental illness. Like, I am so excited that I have a friend that is in the middle of mental health care, because I just cannot wait to spend a whole bunch of hours laying some of the stuff on her and finding out like what has been passed down through the pipeline to real healthcare clinicians. Anyway, back to the story. New technology developed by researchers at Tel Aviv University is poised to transform the way in which patients with mental illness are monitored and treated by clinicians. Dr. Yuri Nevo, research team engineer Karen Sala, and scientists from Tau facility, Tau's Faculty of Engineering and Segal School of Neuroscience, had developed a new smartphone-based system that detects changes in patients' behavioral patterns and then transmits them to professionals in real time. It has a potential to greatly improve the response time of clinical psychiatrists. And by facilitating patient observation through smartphones, the technology also affords patients the much-needed independence from hospitals, clinicians, and even family members. So this is like, I mean, even back in the late 90s, early 2000s, they had come out with GPS tracking just on a little device, whether it be a wrist device or a necklace, that they were spinning not only for tracking like fleet vehicles like taxis or vehicles owned by a corporation, service vehicles by your techs that are on the road, let's say, so you get a real time see if they're parked at the strip club during work hours or whatever. But also they were trying to spin it for the elderly patients that maybe had memory issues or Alzheimer's, so you could find them if they ever got lost. And I mean, there were a lot of people pushing back on that back then. They also wanted to use it to track children so your child couldn't get abducted, you know, and plant it in your kid's backpack. And back in those days even, and I know because my cousin was a he was into like some startup companies and got me to give him some money to invest. And it was before I knew any better. So forgive me on that. But to invest in one of these GPS tracking companies. And they were marketing this not only for fleet vehicles, old people and children as a wearable device, but their future planning was for implantables. And that didn't happen. They ran into issues where implantables, the immune system would find this little thing that they put under the skin and would turn it into like a cyst. They would coat it with whatever. You know, your immune system works on anything it finds as a foreign organism. And they had problems with that. So it was kind of put on hold for implantables. But we're seeing now that they are able, with now synthetic biology in that, to be able to create these implantables that can fool your body and your immune system as to the fact that it's some foreign body inside your body. So, you know, wait for that one, because those implantables are coming. It is the next generation. They've already been talking about it, that they're doing testing in labs. Anyway, back to the story. Research on the application was presented in March of 2014 at the Israeli Society for Biological Psychiatry, at their annual conference, and the project won funding from the Israeli Ministry of Economy and was recently chosen as one of the four finalist startup initiatives featured at Israel's leading entrepreneurship and innovation 8200 accelerator program. The team is currently in talks with other medical centers in Israel as well as overseas to expand the clinical trials. Using tools already in the hand, the diagnosis of mental health disease is based only on behavioral patterns, says Dr. Nevo. In some cases, a patient is discharged from the hospital into a vacuum with no idea how to monitor his or her new state of mind. And I'm going to tell you, having some friends with family members and others who really do have some issues going on upstairs, and they tried to get them help. They got them into a facility. The facility and insurance only covers for so long, and then they let them out. And these poor people are now at a point in time where there's nobody that'll really help them. They can't get them into treatment. They can't, you know, the insurance company is refusing to pay for any more help. And basically, they are left on their own to deal with somebody who is very unstable. And so, again, slippery slope. I mean, if you really have an issue, it's good to be able to have some place to turn to get some assistance. But on the other hand, you know, when we start seeing that now they're talking about, you know, they're understanding the brain more, that we have all of these mental diseases that are happening on a spectrum. So we have mild to severe, where they can use things that they've determined to show mental disease, like oppositional defiant disorder, because you don't agree with authority sometimes, as you know, a mental disease itself in the DSM, is very concerning to me. And especially as now they start on these behavioral patterns. I mean, is it going to be that when they hear me getting all amped up on things that they're going to determine that I have some mental disease? You know, I'm on the phone ranting to my dad or something about something. Are they going to be able to monitor me and determine that I'm having an episode? You know, I mean, because from that perspective, I'd have to say, yeah, I definitely get twisted up and have some episodes. Am I dangerous? No. Is it a relief valve? Yeah. You know, my yapping is how I get my stress level out. But slippery slope. You know, this 24-hour surveillance of every biological processes, including your behavioral patterns, is very, very dangerous for the future. Anyway, back to the story. In some cases, a patient is discharged from the hospital into a vacuum with no idea how to monitor his or her new state of mind. But most people own smartphones today, and we thought, hey, why not harness the smartphone, which is a reservoir of your daily activities, to monitor your behavioral patterns? Well, you know, you better believe that the alphabet agencies are already doing something like that. It says bipolar disorder, for example, starts with a manic episode, says Dr. Nevo. a patient who usually makes 5 or 10 calls a day might suddenly start making dozens of calls a day. How much they talk, text, how many places they visit, when they go to bed, and for how long. These are all indicators of mental health. Ding, 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 ding. And provide important insights to clinicians who want to catch a disorder before it is full blown. I'm going to tell you, I think all of us have a little bit of bipolar disorder. I think creative people have a little bit of bipolar disorder. I know me, myself, I definitely get into manic episodes and then into the low ends. But I don't think it has to necessarily do with brain chemicals. I mean, there are lots of outside influences, deadlines, projects, you know, things that are going on in your life that always affect your brain chemicals and your bodily chemistry. Also, you know, with the gut microbiome, and I pulled up a new story on that, the gut microbiome can also influence your brain state, your mental state, whether or not you're depressed. So I don't see how they necessarily can take how much I talk, how much I text, how much I sleep as an indicator as to whether or not I'm mentally ill. You know, some nights I do only get 4 hours of sleep. Some nights, like last night, I actually got 12 because it was Sunday. And I was able, with my automation, to be able to automate most of that so I could actually get a good night's sleep. But, you know, while I was working on all my automation, yeah, I was manical because I had 5 projects that I was trying to get done before the end of 2015 and start beta testing. And so I would only get a few hours of sleep. I'd be calling the people that are supposed to be helping me beta test or texting them to get their asses on the line to help, you know? I mean, this doesn't make any sense how they can use these small indicators that, I don't know. I mean, just using myself as an example, I definitely would be on this list. But it's not from being manical. It's because I work like crazy and I have a mission. I'm working on stuff and it requires me to have bursts of energy when it's time. Anyway, all right. So anyway, these are all indicators of mental health and they provide important insight to clinicians who want to catch a disorder before it's full blown. Researchers conducted 2 Helsinki approved clinical trials with the cooperation and direction of leading psychiatrists from the Giha Mental Health Center in the, I don't speak Jewish, whatever this is, Beir Yakovdov Mental Health Center. And in the trials, the application was installed on smartphones of 20 patients who suffered from bipolar, unipolar depressive, or schizoaffective disorders, as well as on the phones of 20 healthy participants. Over the course of 6 months, the apps acquired data from patients' phones and sent the information to distant computers over their pesky internet, where advanced algorithms, ding, ding, analyzed the data to detect changes in patients' sleep, communication, mobility, and vocal patterns. Guys, this is all the nightmare shit we've been talking about. It's been happening. This already, the story was from 2014. The researchers further developed a visualization system that displayed the summarized information to psychiatrists, providing them with instant insight into behavioral trends and of their patients. So they must have provided on the other end a really nice little dashboard by name that gave them pretty pictures with colors and charts. According to Dr. Nevo, a patient using the app has full control over who has access to their behavioral patterns recorded and analyzed by it. Yeah, of course. But in the back door, I'm sure alphabet agencies also have access to all that information. It says, we take great care to protect the patient's privacy. Well, yeah, in 2014, but now that they circumvented all the HIPAA laws, anyone probably at some point in the future that is under the care of a quote-unquote mental health care professional are probably going to have their data sent somewhere as a mandatory for getting out of the psych ward. The content of calls and the texts is completely ignored and never acquired or recorded, not here by the NSA, they probably are, and any identifying parameter of the patient or of his contacts are irreversibly masked and obviously not used. Well, you know, they could say all they want, but all that data is accessible. psychiatrists in the trials reported that the system has already positively affected their interactions with patients, offering a useful, objective window into their patients' daily routine. And one patient who was involved in the clinical trial for only a brief period recently suffered a hospitalization. If I had kept the app on my phone, you would have immediately noticed the unusual number of phone calls I was making, and the hospitalization could have been prevented, he told his psychiatrist. The savior says, we have a way to go until such a system is proven to be effective and adopted by the psychiatric community. However, psychiatrists as well as U.S. federal policymakers, ding, 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 agree that such a tool is necessary to improve psychiatric process. Now, let's fast forward a year and a half later, and what do we have but good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, now moving to Google to develop smartphone psychiatric apps for tracking and diagnosing mental illness. So, you know what? This definitely is a put on a seatbelt. I mean, if I had to say something nice about this app and where I think it could be used effectively, I would say with some of the, what would they be called? The not assisted living, the independent living with adult individuals that have some sort of, I have a lot of my friends who work in this field with developmentally disabled adults. And back in the past, they used to keep developmentally disabled adults in a hospital, but they, over the last 20 years or so, they've been moving them out into independent group living facilities where they actually have a house. They get to make their own meals and take care. And then they have a care worker who comes and checks on them daily and makes sure things are going well. I mean, this might be a good place for that, to make sure that they're not wandering off somewhere, you know, make sure that they're not having a fit. I mean, there are issues, you know, where they start to go a little, have anger issues and whatever. I mean, I definitely could see for monitoring developmentally disabled adults who, I mean, there's no question about whether or not they have some maturity issues, let's say. But once you start getting into, you know, diagnosing mental illness because somebody has some manic behavior, somebody's getting upset and they're going to determine that because of my actions, because the algorithm ran my behavior, that I'm having some sort of mental psychotic episode, I really have problems with that. All right. So, all in the name of learning about the brain, a story came out on Thursday or Friday, it appears, called New Wave in Technology. This is out of phys.org. Hacking the brain. The next frontier for the tech sector, and I've been saying this for the last year, is the human brain. Now, this past week in Las Vegas, they had the Consumer Electronics 2016 show, and there were all kinds of really freaky things that they released there. You had the singular individual flying drone. I don't know if you guys caught that, where it'll fly one person up to 11,000 feet for 20 miles, I believe, in this quadcopter drone thing. They also had the smart refrigerator from Samsung, ding, ding. Samsung is the one that we had to watch for on the Internet of Things. And if we have time, we'll actually look at the smart fridge. But anyway, they were dealing with hacking the human brain and some new tools at this Consumer Electronics Show this past week. It says the next frontier for the tech sector is the human brain. A new breed of neuro hacker is finding ways to capture and manipulate brain waves to improve health with the potential to help the severely handicapped. Now, remember, a lot of this research has been happening behind the scenes with DARPA. A number of these innovations were on display at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, where computer scientists and biomedical experts showcased ways to tap into and use brain signals. The quote-unquote mind control headband, unveiled by startup named BrainCo, effectively hacks into brain signals with a range of possible applications, from helping to improve your attention span, to detecting disease, to controlling smart home appliances, or even a prosthetic device. The device, quote, translates your brainwaves into electrical signals, unquote. And at the CES, BrainCo demonstrated how a person could use the headband to manipulate a prosthetic hand, a potential life changer for those paralyzed or with missing limbs. And we have already seen that in the DARPA research for, of course, our soldiers. They had ones with missing limbs where they had the mind control limbs, but they also had different things with the PTSD. We had brain implants. We'd already been working on this for quite a while, but now it's rolling out to the consumer marketplace. The device designed by scientists from where? Oh, Harvard and MIT, ding, ding, employs neurofeedback as a means for allowing people to control their brainwaves for various purposes. It is now expected to be sold later this year for less than $150. They suggested that this device could also help people with attention deficit disorder because, quote, it teaches you to enhance your focus and your concentration. A similar product on display from New York-based OpenBCI, which stands for Open Source Brain Computer Interface, seeks to create a platform for applications of technology in healthcare, education, and other fields. OpenBCI uses a 3D printed helmet, which captures brain waves from various sectors of the brain. It says this can be used to help people with ALS, which is amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease, or with quadriplegics to help them communicate. The technology also offers a potential for so-called neuromarketing, which tests new products and services on the basis of your sensory and cognitive responses. Of course, they're going to find a way to spin being able to detect your brainwaves into making money, right? South Korean startup Luoxid Labs unveiled a headset that tracks both brainwaves and eye movements, claiming that this provides more accurate insight into the mind. No other device that I am aware of combines these things, says Luoxid's chief business officer, Alex Chang, and the headset attached to a computer. You can roll your eyes to scroll the mouse and click on a button by blinking. That might kind of be cool, but makes you wonder where they're going to be sending that data to as well. Some sort of behavioral database. The headset is being launched in July as a developer kit with a scope to build applications for controlling physical or virtual objects, communicating, and here we go, analyzing a user's mood or mental health, as well as verifying their identity. Now, that is a scary thought. We also, and, you know, this is coming out of South Korea, where we had Samsung working on the robot army to automate a lot of production in the factories. South Korea is also where we have a big military base, remember? They were sending anthrax and stuff there for bio testing for some of their biosensors and stuff too. I would say South Korea would be a place to keep your eye on. We also see this as having potential in gaming, of course, because you can control things with your eyes. And when you concentrate, you can stop the bullets in the game. He added that for neuromarketing applications, so that is definitely a new term, neuromarketing. We can show someone an ad, and we can see where their eyes are focused, and we can scan emotions and understand how someone is responding. other exhibitors at the Consumer Electronics Show demonstrated wearable devices that block pain signals to the brain as an alternative to medications with side effects for people who suffer from debilitating pain. And I'm assuming that they're going to be using some sort of frequencies acting on some part of the brain that will block the pain signals. I don't exactly know. They don't give a lot of detail on that. The neurofeedback technique is being applied as a meditation aid by the Canadian-based Intra-Exon. This is not the Inter-Exon, that company we talked about that bought Oxitec mosquitoes as well as the non-browning apples. This is Inter-Exon, I-N-T-E-R-A-X-O-N. So the Canadian-based Inter-Exon and its Muse headband. Muse uses sensors on the forehead and behind the ears to measure brain signals and advises users how to improve their meditation technique. The coaching app helps people achieve a level of consistency in their meditation efforts. They say it's like going to the gym. The muscles don't get stronger unless you do it over and over again, and it's the same with your brain. One startup at the Consumer Electronics Show was showcasing a technique to deliver pleasure signals, oh no, to the brain via music by triggering the release of neurotransmitters such as dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin. Well, this is something that every dopamine addict that's out there, all the psychopaths we have floating around, self-made from this society we have, will probably love one of these. I'd say we should be investing in this company. I want to find out who they are. They don't give a name on that. I'm going to find out who that is. That would be one investment. Somebody working on a way to trigger the release of dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin and give you like the pleasure jolt you need. That's pretty twisted. Also, the handheld device from Florida-based Nirvana with an E, N-E-R-V-A-N-A, allows users to plug into a music player, plug a music player into the $299 device and get pleasurable signals delivered by its headphones. We send a signal into, oh my God, here we go. We send a signal into the vagus nerve, which produces what? Dopamine. That relaxes you. So look, they've already figured that out. And I'm telling you, that's the DARPA research. They were playing with that vagus nerve with soldiers on how to get them to release things such as dopamine or adrenaline while on the battlefield. It says, we send a signal into the vagus nerve, which produces dopamine that relaxes you. Some people describe the sensation as euphoric. I mean, isn't this going to turn into like junkies in the Matrix? If you could put on a headphone that you can just keep making it give you pleasurable sex chemicals, isn't somebody just going to be laying around doing that all day? Because I could see that very, very, very easily, especially when they, and I mean, dopamine is the addiction chemical. So to have someone describing it as euphoric, I see this as like leading to much more mental disease. We also saw that with gamers, as they gamed more, it physically changed their makeup of their brain. The area where the dopamine is produced gets larger, requiring more dopamine the next time to get a fix. This is very, very bad. He says, this is the marketing manager, he says that it is not really hacking the brain. We access the central nervous system, and it just tickles that nerve to remind the brain to release dopamine. People who practice yoga or meditation can already do this, so don't worry about it. I mean, holy crap. So they're tickling your nerve to release dopamine. Let's create some more psychopaths. So that's the end of that story. Pretty insane. I think we might, I don't know where we're going to go. Neuroscience has now figured out how your brain wakes you up. And this could be the key to treating everything from Alzheimer's to chronic sleep problems. You may not realize it when your alarm clock forces you into bleary-eyed stupor first thing in the morning, but there actually is a complex chemical process going on inside your brain as you wake up. And scientists now think that they have identified the part of the brain that ends periods of light sleep and brings us into the state of awakefulness. Researchers from Switzerland focused their attention on specific neural circuits located between the brain's hypothalamus and the thalamus. And by stimulating the circuit with pulses of light, now again, more DARPA research in a group of mice, the academics could prompt a rapid awakening from sleep and then caused prolonged wakefulness. Now, put on a seatbelt, because didn't we just look at where all of a sudden you had prolonged wakefulness and they were tagging that as manic behavior and bipolar? You know, all of this brain hacking is very, 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 very scary. We should be paying a lot of attention to this. Why should we be excited about knowing more about how we get yanked out of our regular sleep patterns? Well, the researchers say that it could ultimately help those who are trapped in a long-term coma or vegetative state. And yes, that would be a good thing. Or on the flip side, could also help those with sleep disorders, or at least give doctors, here we go, a better idea of why you aren't sleeping correctly. The consequences of sleep perturbations on life quality go far beyond daytime sleepiness and mood alteration. Cognitive impairment, hormonal imbalance, and high susceptibility to cardiac or metabolic disorders are among some of the negative impacts frequently associated with subtle chronic sleep problems. The researchers also found that by inhibiting that same neural circuit, by shutting down the pulses, they could cause the mice to fall into a deeper sleep. Yes, they have now found a way to inhibit your neural circuits to put you into a deep, deep sleep. Yeah, that can't be good. While key brain circuits for both deeper REM sleep and the lighter non-REM sleep have previously been identified, little is known about its underlying mechanisms. Even though we've made an important step forward, it will take some time before novel therapeutic strategies will be designed based on our results, but there is fresh hope for those suffering from chronic sleep problems. The team found that with enough stimulation, mice could even be brought out from under the effects of an anesthetic. And while some forms of deep brain electrical stimulation have been tried in the past, this one is far more targeted. And notice how they don't tell you how exactly they were stimulating the brain, but that gives it away that deep brain electrical stimulation is the brain implant that DARPA was working on. And they were using little flashes of light. They somehow made the brain, by injecting some stuff into it, susceptible to light pulses. And they were able to do all kinds of things, including produce chemicals in the brain. They did that brain implant live surgery on National Geographic, and that was to treat Parkinson's. And one of the treatments for Parkinson's is dopamine. And they even mentioned that with previous research linking pervasive disorders such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and schizophrenia to sleep problems, this discovery could eventually have long-lasting impact in various areas of health. Are you guys starting to see all these connections coming together? It's all about making you better, but it's all about hijacking your brain and monitoring what happens. This is extremely, extremely invasive. All right, we have last few minutes. This story here, I don't know, do we keep going on mental illness? Maybe we start on this one tomorrow, because this is kind of long. It is titled, and I mentioned this before, Infectious Madness: The Surprising Science of How We Can Catch Mental Illness. And this was out of the New York Times. Yes, we can, quote unquote, catch mental illness from people and our surroundings. It's got to be frightening. Maybe what we'll do is we will finish up the show looking at the smart fridge, the first one. from the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. This is the hottest technology coming out of Vegas this year. Samsung's Family Hub Fridge could be the first truly smart appliance. The Family Hub Fridge by Samsung may have a hokey name and a high price, but it is smart. Its smart, thoughtful design and clever features make us really want one. I, not me, the writer of the story, did not expect to be wowed by Samsung's $5,000 new Family Hub refrigerator. After all, we reviewed one of the company's earlier attempts at the smart fridge a few years ago and were hardly impressed. And yet the Family Hub refrigerator is full of good ideas that are actually useful as opposed to mere gimmicks. And remember, these smart devices in our homes are going to be used as a hub for all of the Internet of Things devices that soon will be sprinkled around your home. And they'll be able to then ferry out that information over an internet connection to who the hell knows where and monitor what is going on inside your home. According to Samsung, the Family Hub name was chosen. Well, who gives a crap? Because the refrigerator reconnects families. So that's just, you know, a good marketing ploy. It's got a 21-inch 1080p touchscreen on the door. It's got Samsung's Tizen operating system, and it sort of looks like a gigantic Android phone. But unlike the other refrigerators we reviewed, it doesn't just seem like a tablet. It says you can post post-it notes for your family, share calendar reminders, display art, or pin photos. It also scans the contents of your refrigerator with three cameras inside the door and capture an image every time the door is open and closed. And with its built-in Wi-Fi, you can access the most recent picture of what is inside your refrigerator from no matter where you are on your smartphone. And then it'll spit you out a list for grocery shopping. And I'm sure there's all kinds of other things. It works with Alexa, the voice assistant from Amazon, as well as other Internet of Things devices around your home. All right, guys, we'll make sure you stick around. If you can even believe it, we knocked another one out. It is Monday. And we have Lonnie Clark up live next. And then tonight we have some of the best of this weekend. Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly was a really good one at 6 p.m. Eastern. Corbett Report with James Corbett was another really good one at 7. Unlock the Door with Michael Cross at 8. Truth on the Tracks, brand new with Brandon Turberville at 9, 10 o'clock. Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt and live at 11.